It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got a great panel here, including Mike Elkin and Alex Lindsay in the same room at the same time. Renee Ritchie, Andy Yannacco will talk about Apple's quarterly results about to come out as we do the show, what the iWatch might portend for biofeedback, and a review, first look anyway, at this little doohickey, the Leap Motion Controller. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
You love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 360, recorded July 23rd, 2013. Camera rejection kit. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code MacBreak. And by Shutterstock.com, with over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code MacBreak7. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers all your Apple and Macintosh needs. With Mr. Haggis here, he's been eating haggis all weekend. Mr. Alex Lindsay, back from Scotland.
So good.
I don't know how you could say anything with sheep and the word sheep intestines in it is good.
Haggis is so yummy.
What is it? Roasted? Is it a stew?
They made it in everything. So I had one where it was like a chicken breast stuffed with haggis, which was very, very good. And then I had straight haggis.
It's like the spam. And then I had skin. It's not got much haggis in it.
Yeah, exactly.
We got haggis, 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 eggs, and haggis.
I think I'm really.
Did you have that?
I've been thinking that I should really create a house of haggis.
The haggis hut.
Haggis hut.
House. All right, good. You could show us. Did you have sous vide haggis?
No, I didn't have sous vide haggis, but I bet you that would actually
house
be
of sous vide
good.
Haggis.
Yes.
You shouldn't laugh, Renee Ritchie. You've got poutine.
I was going to ask Alex if you had haggis poutine.
Renee Ritchie's here from iMore.com. Also, Andy Yannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Mr. Yannacco, what is the unusual Boston tree? Lobster. Bugs.
Now you've got me really concerned because I don't know of a single like Boston area delicacy that's really, really horrible, which means that the probable solution is that there are horrible things. It's just that I grew up in Boston. Oh, Moxie. There you go. Moxie. There you go.
Moxie soda is horrible.
It is the most and the weirdest thing is you go into it's this like 1920s licorice flavored soda. Oof. and you go into every single store, like the Stop and Shops that have like 80 million square feet will always have exactly 2 2-liter bottles and 1 12-pack of Moxie that has never been that they freshen them once a year. Like who is the guy who's getting that like 1 foot of shelf space for Moxie soda? It is the most horrible thing I've ever tasted.
Wasn't there a Stephen King in one of his novels, I think it was in the 11/23/63 Moxie features.
I think that in The Stand there was one of like the worst demons from the lowest levels of the pits, and he came up and Stephen King said he smelled almost exactly like Moxie, only not quite so pungent. The taste in the air dissipated after only an hour. Whereas with Moxie, you're stuck with that on the roof of your mouth.
Stephen King went to Lisbon Falls High School, famous for its Moxie Days, a celebration of the soft drink Moxie, and the Kennebec Fruit Company, which appears in 11/23/63 is locally known as the Moxie Store. So there you go. There's the Moxie connection. Hey, look who else is here. His last time in the studio, for a while anyway, Mike Elkin of Google Plus and Elkin.com and Computer World. He's going to be heading out. This is the man without a home, the man without a country.
That is correct. Well, the whole world is my home.
Right.
The whole
better,
world is
better
my
way
country.
To think of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nowadays,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're going to go to Florence.
Florence, Italy for 6 weeks.
Oh, God, what a life.
Yeah. That's right. Yep. Well, you know.
No haggis in Florence, though.
Nobody get jealous. It's going to be 100 degrees, and and that's Celsius. I mean, it's supposed to be really hot in the summer. A lot of mosquitoes, stuff like that. Yeah. But you know, somebody's got to do it.
Hey, I'm very proud to be included in the classics section. Apple has celebrated. Surprising, because Apple's always had kind of a love-hate relationship with the podcast.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs even said he made fun of them a little bit.
Yeah.
Amateur radio. But they are celebrating 1 billion subscriptions. That means 1 billion people have pressed that button, subscribe.
Wow.
That's a lot. Although, you know, I would guess most of the people in our audience have pressed that button hundreds of times, you know, unsubscribe, subscribe.
Damn it.
You know, well, whatever. But they do list some of the top podcasts, and I'm happy to say one of ours, the Twitch show, is in there as the classics, along with This American Life, Happy Tree Friends, Real Time with Bill Maher, Smodcast, Kevin Smith's podcast, NPR, and on, 60 Minutes. We aren't featured anywhere else, but I think that's fair that you probably each producer gets one, right?
That's fair. Also, and once you discover the one, you'll discover the rest.
Yeah. MacBreak Weekly is certainly as old, you know, almost as old as and certainly as popular as This Week.
You're like the Eagles' greatest hits and only in podcast form.
Yeah, now I know.
You're that perennial album that always...
Now I know how Don Henley feels whenever Hotel California makes it to the top of the chart, you know, the one best 100 songs of all time list. But yeah. All my children are my favorites.
I was looking through behind-the-scenes photos, and I had a couple behind-the-scenes of, like, the first time we shot video of Twit.
Wow.
You know, back in the
it was at the Apple Store.
Cottage?
At that bar in Novato.
Oh, gosh, yeah, Moylan's.
And none of the cameras matched, and it was...
Oh, I do remember that. I was sweaty from running cables.
It was classic.
Yeah, you're right, though. It's good for podcasts in general to get this kind of attention, I'm thrilled that we're included in that list.
I'm hopeful that Apple is now sort of changing its tune about podcasts. It's always kind of, like you say, had a love-hate relationship, and hopefully that was... You know, maybe that was something that Steve Jobs had a personal thing against, because, you know, they spend money on it and they don't make any money on
right.
it. There's a lot of infrastructure. They actually have editorial staffs. They have their pay. Whoever
Somebody does this,
whoever did this yeah. is a paid, you know, they have a group
They're
of people.
Actually nice
who do
guys.
That. Yeah. So it's really nice. And I personally believe that podcasting is the most underappreciated resource in the world. I mean, I personally get so much out of it. You know, and everybody complains about being too busy, but then, you know, when you're going to go hiking or do the dishes, do housework, whatever, you can always be educating yourself.
I think if Steve Jobs were alive today, he would look at things like TED Talks some of the other prestigious shows and say, you know, 60 Minutes and say, okay, This American Life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is not just somebody in the basement.
Yeah.
It's the same reaction people had to blogs in the early days. Oh, bloggers
are
guys
in their garage making a computer.
Yeah.
Well, I think Apple, though. I don't think
you give Apple credit. I think you give credit to podcasting for surviving for 8 years,
right.
I guess it is.
Yeah.
And
I think when we look back 30, 40 years, I think that unless Apple makes a major change, I think people are going to look at that they were sitting on top of a gold mine and they just completely missed the boat on content.
Yeah.
You know, because they are, if you look at where YouTube, where Netflix, Amazon, all these folks are investing in content. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not just, you know,
That's
and
a good
they're
point.
And
Netflix
they're
got doing... Emmy nominations for two of its shows.
Yes.
First time ever.
Yeah. And Netflix just did a hangout for their earnings call yesterday.
So, do they have a good one?
Yeah.
Earnings call? Yeah.
Yeah. But
they got 600,000 new subscribers just from Arrested Development alone.
Right.
And so it proves the model.
And the thing is that Apple, beyond all of these companies, has the ability. I mean, they could spend $50 million on a movie every week, only releasing it to iTunes, and they would, and it would, even if they didn't make any money on it, which they would.
Why doesn't Apple do
it would
that?
barely show up on the radar. And it's not that Apple has to learn how to do content. Apple just has to learn how to hire producers that make content. I mean, you know, they could become, you know, they could be doing that content.
Oh, anybody could do it. Sure.
And they could be releasing the content. And
I've
complained
a little bit about YouTube being in the content business, and I'd have the same complaint about Apple, because it's what Jeff Jarvis calls channel conflict.
Mm-hmm.
It was what the movie industry got sued for in the early days when they owned both the theaters and the means of production. They were split up, basically, because it was too much control.
Well, just an example, they promoted Twit on that, but I doubt that they would promote MacBreak Weekly, because this is a show that's honest and
about Apple,
and they don't like that. You know, I mean, I
but that's the channel conflict.
Exactly.
It's a big problem with YouTube, because YouTube... Presumably, a video on YouTube gets better search results than YouTube on Vimeo, let's say, because it's owned by Google.
Yeah.
Google would say no, but I find that hard to believe.
But I think that, as a producer of content, I look at it as, it's pushing more money into that pipe, and it's creating new opportunities,
right.
For producers to
work. Oh, it's great. If you're selling content, it's great.
Well, and specifically content that if you can't get into TV, but you want to make some money working on it. The problem right now is that, everyone's still trying to figure out how to generate revenue with it. I mean, Twitter's figured that out, but most people haven't.
Here's my issue, and that you hit the nail on the head. It's hard to turn that money down, but you're doing a deal with the devil. It was the issue I had with iTunes and podcasts in the early days, too. It gives one company a lot of control, and suddenly there's this issue in the case of Google and YouTube of are they unfairly promoting their stuff. In the case of Apple, really the only it's the 90% of our downloads are still through iTunes, so they have a tight grip on what we do. And if for some reason they decided to block Twit, we'd be screwed.
Right.
So I don't like I've always said from the day that Apple started carrying podcasts, which was 2009, it was much later. I said it's the best thing that ever happened to podcasting and the worst thing.
Yeah.
But I think that one of the things that's important is that we as podcasters,
we want to make
our advantage. No, it's to our advantage to have TV be decentralized. And so having new people coming up, I agree, as long as
they don't become the new incumbent and suddenly control it all.
I don't think
the whole point of podcasting is to democratize the media.
It is.
To give everyone a voice.
And I think that Apple pulling more people away from TV and into iTunes means that we have more people that are looking at this as a valid solution. And so when there's original content on Netflix, when there's original content on Amazon, on YouTube.
Brian N.W. says, this is what you get when you build your business in our chat room on free services. I always thought Twit's been rather disingenuous about this. Not at all. It's not something we chose. In fact, we make you can subscribe to our stuff in about 100 different ways, and every way possible, we constantly encourage you to do so. But the fact of the matter still is that most people choose iTunes, and that disturbs me. If I could make that less of a...
Well, they choose it because it's easy.
Well, and that's the advantage. It's the best of the things and the worst of the things. Mm-hmm. The advantage is you want to be easy.
Right.
You want to make it easy
for people. It's even worse than you say, because Apple users in general are the kind of people who buy things in higher numbers. So there's an advertiser-supported company.
I don't know if I know that that's true.
Well,
you're saying people who subscribe own Apples and therefore subscribe and propel.
Well, I mean, look at the story with the
hotel.
We don't
make more money on this show than we do on non-Apple shows. Let's put it that way.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that the people, I mean, I think that, the vast majority of people who use iTunes, for example, are Windows users, because the vast majority of Windows users are, they're using iPhones and stuff like that. But what I'm saying is that in general, anything related to Apple, anything that attracts the Apple customer base is going to skew towards spending more money. If you look at the hotel, which automatically, upgrades, rearranges the results for searching for hotel rooms to the more expensive rooms because they know you're using a Mac, that's an example of somebody responding to the fact that Mac people and Apple customers in general tend to spend more than non-Apple customers. So, the majority of your people come through iTunes, but it's also the average user is probably a bigger spender as well.
Except for apps. Not $1 for a game. Too expensive.
Yeah. Freemium. I'm not sure. That's certainly been the case, but I think that's changing. I do think that's changing, but I'm not sure. There was a survey we quoted on Twit, and I don't know how accurate it was, of 6,000 developers who said that they were starting to make more and more from Android. It was it was a small difference.
Yeah.
It's certainly been the case up to now that Apple, it might be because Apple costs more than anything else. So it's self-selecting. Yeah. If you buy an Apple, you're willing to pay more.
Right.
And arguably for better quality products.
Yeah.
But that's a hardware thing. It may not skew into content, because we've seen with apps and with other forms of media that even if you have an expensive Apple device, you're still not willing to pay a lot of money for the content that goes on it.
Because you're broke now because you bought an Apple device.
But I think a lot of people are spending a lot of money on apps. They're just not spending a lot of money on each app. And so I think that that's the...
To get back to your point, though, Alex, content is rapidly becoming disassociated from its means of distribution. Right. That's great. Mm-hmm. And as long as you don't have a monopoly in any one hand, I'm fine with Apple making content, Netflix making content.
Well, I think we're past... I mean, I think that we were in danger of that at some point, but I think that there is so much money that is going into online media right now. Yeah. When you look between net and the big players are Netflix, Amazon, Google, and Apple. Those are the four. And those
Except that Apple's not creating content.
And I think that
iTunes Festival once this summer, and that's it.
And Apple's going to get passed by the other three because they're not. They're not. And they are in the pole position. They make all the software that we use to make the content. Right. They have the distribution it is insane. The only reason I can think of that the reason they don't get into it is specifically to avoid antitrust because Apple
DOJ
could create.
Would be interested.
Apple could create and I don't think that that's possible now because I think if they had done it in 10 years ago, Apple could have built a vertical production pipe that would have made Krupp's arms look like a walk in the park.
Yep.
You know, and so because they would have had everything from iMovie all of it. But now I don't think it's possible. Now I don't think it's an issue.
I think it's as simple as they don't feel as though they're in the business of producing television. They're not in the business of producing film. The idea of putting together a technology company versus putting together a creative arts company, they have overlap, but there's such different mindsets.
Just buy Disney.
Engineers are people who are used to getting tangible results and having their feet held to the fire, saying, "Well, this does not work, and therefore this is not a finished product." But creative people, they're used to being able to have Coke fits for 3 weeks on end, not go into rehearsals, not hand in drafts.
Yeah, but they don't have to know any of that. They just the people who run movie companies don't know how to do that stuff. They just hire people to do it. I mean, the thing is that you just hire a producer and say, "I want to make a show." I mean, Netflix.
I doubt Netflix had any expertise.
They hired the right team who then hired the right team who then put together an incredible series.
But what we're learning now...
Netflix's sole business is content. They don't sell hardware. They don't sell software.
But
their entire business is putting things into that.
But it was distribution, not production.
Yeah, the thing is that Apple could lose $2 billion a year on this stuff, and it would still be worth doing because it can help them build the model. So here's the problem.
Well, it's not like iTunes is doing badly.
No, but the thing is Apple's constantly begging content providers to, can you do this? Can you make this available? And there's between iBooks, between what you could do with iTunes, as far as Apple could be using these as proof of concepts to show how you integrate an iBook that's sold with the movie, that's sold with the, like the whole model to show the advertisers, or show other content companies what would happen and use their content specifically as a case study that you put out, and I think part of it is also the leverages, Apple, the way to do this and the Google way to do this is to go ahead and make mistakes, and go down that path. But the idea is that, if Apple started pressing down on that direction, it also gives them leverage because what I would be saying in the back channels is, here's the deal. Mm-hmm. We've started making content. You either come to the plate and make deals with us, or we're going to run you into the ground because we can spend this. We can spend $10 billion a year on content.
Because how much money was spent on the Lone Ranger and how much money did it make? It's not about throwing money at the problem.
That's a good example.
It's like at what point does Apple gain leverage, saying, "Hey, look, we put $18 million on a
owning the future of TV." I mean, I think it's worth.
Let me ask the question this way. Until recently, maybe until now, Apple's entire position was, we do all this other stuff so we can sell hardware. Mm-hmm. That we are a hardware company. We do an operating system. We do iTunes. We do everything we do to sell hardware. Is it time for Apple to rethink that? Is that strategy working?
I think it's still selling content. I think it's creating content to sell hardware.
Until recently, I think they're making money now, but they said for a long time, iTunes is just break even.
Mm-hmm.
They said we don't do it to make money. We do it to sell hardware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think there's a good chance of that. I mean, if you had asked me 5 years ago if Apple would be investing massively in building these maps, for example, and I don't want to change the subject to maps, but the amount they've been investing in acquiring companies to compete with Google in maps, I would have said you're nuts. They're not going to do that. They sell hardware. But I mean, there's
no maps sell hardware. We know now.
Well, I the question is,
they sell phones.
Does controlling Hollywood sell hardware.
But I don't think they have to control hardware.
How far do you have to go?
Well, I don't think it's about controlling Hollywood. I think it's scaring Hollywood.
Exactly.
You know, like you know, and
you know, Andy mentioned Andy mentioned the cost of the Lone Ranger. That's lunch money for Apple. Apple could literally buy Hollywood. I mean, they have so much. They're so much bigger than Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're not. Are they really used to saying, "Here is a project that we put $250 million into. It made we put it on sale and it made back about $18 million. We are so totally going to look at that product over again." That's not the philosophy of Apple.
Well, they'll probably consult with Pixar.
I do 100% agree with you on the idea that Apple has to move the company more heavily towards content, not away from hardware, but they have to make that more important, because the problem is that they're making great phones. They're great. They're new. They're novel. They're hip. This style of phone is wonderful. But then all they have to do is be behind the ball once, and now this phone is no good anymore. Whereas if you're selling the Eagles' greatest hits, once that's finished and once that's a saleable product, you can sell that forever. So
here's another thing. I strongly think the reason Netflix is doing what they're doing is specifically to improve their position with the industry. It is not, they're not trying to turn that into their only business. What they're trying to do is make sure that the industry gets that they will either supply them with content or they will create the content. And the thing is that they, you know, and I don't think that the industry in a industry that is becoming more and more difficult to navigate, having more players with big money rolling into it is not something that most Hollywood folks want to see.
And it's also a problem in its own right, and it's a problem that Apple has to overcome. And you talked about other successes like the iPhone and stuff like that. What Apple does is that they want to improve the content consumption experience. The mother of all content consumption experiences is television.
Right.
And Apple is not going to sit on the sidelines. They're going to do whatever it takes to be in the driver's seat in terms of the future development of television. And if that requires, maybe it doesn't, but if it does require the funding, and remember, what Amazon has demonstrated is that a movie studio is simply an investor.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's what Kickstarter, I mean, even Spike Lee is going to Kickstarter to do, to crowdfund movies.
Well, here's maybe the answer from C-Tower, who's listening to us in Sweden today. An article from February of this year. Tim Cook talks up Apple's software and services. He says, quote, "We're not a hardware company." This is Tim Cook. "There are other things we're doing and could do to have revenue and have profit flow. The sale of an Apple device to a customer isn't the end of the relationship, the beginning, and there are all kinds of elements, including retail, designed to capitalize on that fact." So even Tim Cook, I think, is looking at a new Apple. And, you know, Microsoft has done this. Microsoft was a software company that is now making hardware. And it's a tough time right now, especially for manufacturers. And I think you've got to find new lines of revenue. Somebody said, oh, Wall Street would never allow Apple. Because remember, they're publicly held. Mm-hmm. Would never allow Apple to get in the content business. On the other hand, Wall Street might start to punish them for not doing so.
Apple has over 100 billion reasons not to worry about what Wall Street thinks.
I think the statement that Apple is not a hardware company is literally the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
That's Tim Cook.
Say. They're obviously a hardware company. they may be also a hardware company.
They've said over and over again that they're not a hardware company. Historically, they've always said that those who want to make the best software make their own hardware. It's probably better to think of Apple as a product company that
as opposed to a services
hardware.
Company.
It was more of a philosophical question.
Yeah, but it's important, though, to where the company's going. And I think it's important to say we're not a services company because they suck at
services. People don't go into the Apple store and oogle all the stuff in the Apple store and go, wow, this is amazing software.
Right.
You know, they sell hardware.
It's tightly integrated.
That's what people buy. And
certainly that's why I became an Apple user. It was OS X or in early days System 7 on great hardware, quality hardware. But this is generic hardware at this point. This is a PC. So what is to distinguish it? It's the software.
It's amazingly better than any other hardware. I mean, I just spent $3,000 for this laptop
instead
of spending $400 for Windows laptop.
There are companies making equipment now thanks to Intel's
Alex
Ultrabook
spec. And Alex wants to run OS X on a Hackintosh if they would let him. I mean, you know, some people just want the OS X experience, too.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break. It's a great conversation. It really does speak to the soul of Apple and where they're going. And congratulations on 1 billion podcast subscriptions. I think that's a very encouraging thing. And maybe it'll help Apple remember that podcasts are maybe not a revenue source, but they're a part of this ecosystem of content that they
congrats support. Leo for being in there.
And I'm thrilled that we have at least one show in there.
I think they did pick per provider, and if you're going to pick Twit, you're going to pick
clear.
Twit.
You're right there between Happy Tree Friends and Bill Maher. So we've really categorized
you. We're in
the
classics, which means we're old. We're old. Actually, I was thinking podcasting started in September 2004. It was the first time... you know, Adam Curry created the little whatever Python script that he did.
Right.
So that was the first time it was coined as podcasts. I mean, RSS feeds and they're proto podcasters, and a lot of people are doing it for longer. But if we say September 2004, we're about to hit our ninth in 2 months, our ninth anniversary. And my first podcast was October 2004. So. Yeah, it's been a long time.
Pretty classic.
Next year we'll have a party.
Leo used to.
We'd be in Toronto and we'd be up on the
roof.
And we'd have some hardware laying around.
Remember that?
And,
We went to a Motu,
into your laptop. It's great.
Oh, those were the days. But I, you know, just on a personal note, it's been very, very good to me. If we didn't have a method, a means of distributing on the internet, Twit wouldn't exist, because we needed, you know, I knew there was an audience for Tech TV, but Tech TV had relied on a very, very expensive medium, cable television. Thank goodness for the internet.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have to, I don't like to characterize this as a podcast. Is this a podcast? If you're watching live, it's not a podcast. What is it? But the internet and podcasting are very important to our business. So I'm thrilled to see this acknowledgement from Apple. Thank you, Apple. Our show today brought to you by another important part of the ecosystem, our fine advertisers. In fact, one of the companies that's been with us since we started selling advertising is Citrix. And their one of their top products, I think it might be their number one product, is GoToMeeting. It's certainly one we use almost every day here. You got to have meetings. And during the summer, when people are traveling and out and about, when they're having haggis in Scotland or they're enjoying risotto in Firenze, you still have to have meetings. You still have to get together, talk face-to-face. And that's where GoToMeeting is so amazing. With HD Faces, you see their faces. You're seeing their screens, sharing screen back and forth. And it's portable. It's mobile. GoToMeeting works not only on Macs and PCs, but on iPhones, on iPads, Android devices. You can actually present. Now you could present from an iPad, which is pretty cool.
This is what I actually use when I'm overseas all the time. I have my own GoToMeeting account, and I just simply say, hey, I'll just set you up a meeting. If I talk to a couple people, and I'm just constantly doing it, because I can hook to my Wi-Fi.
And the other thing is how easy it is to start a meeting, which really makes – it really does. Yeah. You can send them out an email, the invitations. People just click the link, and it goes.
Yep.
If they don't have the software, it stalls in seconds. I just really – it's a great product. All you got to do is try it. GoToMeeting. Click the orange try it free button. Yes, the apps are free on iPad, iPhone, Android. And GoToMeeting itself is free for 30 days if you visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Please do use our offer code MacBreak so they know where you heard it. GoToMeeting.com, Try It Free, promo code MacBreak, 30 days free of a must-have. It's just a good thing to have in your hip pocket. And try it. Use it. The first thing is to, you know, not only install it, but then to remember, oh yeah, I could do that. I could. And once you start doing that, it becomes so convenient.
It is
so
like,
easy.
That is like the backbone of my company.
Hey, I got new software for the MacBook Air, supposedly to fix the Wi-Fi issue. Also, I didn't know about this, but Photoshop was flickering. So there are three fixes in this update, and then an issue which could cause audio volume to fluctuate during video playback. I don't think I'd noticed anything, but maybe the Wi-Fi issue, and not sitting here where we have pretty strong Wi-Fi, but sitting in my office, sometimes it would drop the Wi-Fi. I haven't used it enough to know.
Definitely had a lot of problems with Photoshop. Photoshop and OmniGraffle, for whatever reason, were both, if you left on...
Sounds like a video driver issue.
It was on my retinas. You'd see them suddenly breaking up. And
One thing they didn't fix, and I wish they would, I think it was a non-tech who discovered that the SMB stack... on OS X in general is really slow, and so you can't get full throughput on device to device transfers on 802.11ac. You're getting really kind of pathetic throughput. So they haven't apparently got a patch for that, but I hope they're working on that. Other stories, iWatch. The drumbeat, it was like the Apple TV. Yep. Are we still talking about the idea that it might do a TV? You just did,
yep.
Mike.
Yep.
I'm kind of...
Same thing with the iPad, same thing with the iPhone before they came out.
Well, you know, they don't ship anything, so we got to talk about what they might ship.
iWatch. What is Tim Cook wearing? Well, that's a Nike Fuel Band.
Fuel Band.
He's a director of Nike.
What is Bob Mansfield wearing? He's wearing a Nike Fuel Band. Yep. What is Kevin Lynch wearing? I don't know.
Microphone.
I can't.
A Swatch.
A microphone. Yeah, I don't see.
I think he had one of those little clip-ons somewhere.
Oh, he has something on him?
I think they were.
I'm looking.
They're just showing the people running the project.
That oh, okay. he's yeah. not wearing, well, he's wearing a suit and tie. So the question is, now the latest is Apple is talking to sensor and fitness experts. Well, that would make sense.
Yep. It's going to be I think it's going to be a primarily fitness focused thing. And, you know, I think the big challenge for Apple is, you know, we tend to look at smartwatches based on the ones that have shipped, like the Sony smartwatch. They're coming out with their second one pretty soon. And these are completely unacceptable for the general market. They're big, clunky. You know, it's like a television set on your wrist. they're completely unacceptable for most women who have smaller wrists, typically, and typically have are used to the idea of having the sort of mini watch, the female version for
if watches. They wear watches, that's but, the real problem. People don't seem to wear watches.
So Apple's challenge is to come out with something that's good enough for business, is elegant enough for people with good taste, and it's small enough for everyone to wear. And I don't think it's possible to do a Sony smartwatch style thing, but with Apple, and meet all those constraints yet. So I think they're going to go after fitness and sensors. They're going to have, you know, to me, that by far the most compelling piece of information that's emerged is that the idea that the fingerprint recognition people within Apple, Authentech people, are involved in the project. And I had written this extensive Cult of Mac column recently about how I thought the iPhone would become the ID thing, not just to secure the phone, but to be your signature in the world in general. And man, if they could do that on a wristwatch, that'd be even better. And I don't think it's an either or thing. I think they could pursue it to be both. But I mean, that could be the killer app for a wristwatch. That's your ID. It unlocks doors. It eliminates passwords. It enables you to buy things. Without even pulling.
I'm dreaming of global entry.
Yeah, yeah.
So this 9to5 article, 9to5 Mac article by Mark Gurman focuses on, as you mentioned, people added to the team coming from a Financial Times story, analyst reports, and so forth. Kevin Lynch, who they acquired as former CTO of Adobe, along with Bob Mansfield and senior hardware director James Foster, leading the team, according to this article. Johnny Ive involved with design, Federighi with software. Supposedly, they're talking to sensor chip and battery power efficiency experts.
Yep.
The group includes a series of longtime Apple employees that created the first, I guess it's just like kind of a hit squad. Battery power experts. They've relocated engineers from Mac projects to focus on power efficiency. As you said, they say the Authentech team, the people who Apple acquired with fingerprint readers, are also involved with iWatch developing fingerprint solutions.
I think one of the most interesting indicators here is just if you look at any mall, any bus, anything, you see so many people who are wearing Fitbits now. And I think that's really the direction that Apple would want to go there.
It's become a status item. No, where's yours, Mike? You're Mr. Fitness. I don't have it. You're just in shape. See, that's the thing. Yeah, I wear this in lieu of being in shape.
Exactly. Yeah. It makes me feel like I'm, you know.
I mean, people very correctly make fun of people walking around with Google Glass because it's such a big, really weird thing to be walking around with. You're wearing an electronic device on your wrist, and it's still, it's going to be hard to get some people to say, I'm going to wear this piece of jewelry, but people are wearing it now. And I think that Apple tends to go after products that are, give them opportunities as opposed to breaking absolutely new ground. And now that they have all this indication that people are willing to spend X dollars for this device and they're willing to wear it every single day, it really has made me think that rather than a watch with a digital like multi-touch face or anything really, really awesome like that, it will be something similarly awesome that only does a couple of things like check your sleep patterns, check your activity patterns, incidentally tell you what time it is, and at least have some sort of a Bluetooth, very low power transponder on it so it can do cool things like when you're holding your iPad, holding your iPhone, will automatically authenticate purchases you make on the iTunes store, maybe even put in passbook functionality so that you don't even necessarily have to hold up your phone at Starbucks because you've paired this with the Starbucks app on your you basically left a digital key on this from your Starbucks app on your phone, and simply tapping it against a transponder at Starbucks says that, okay, this guy's authorized to use this, so why even make him take his phone off the pocket?
Well, one of the things and all that.
Yeah, one of the things I think everyone should keep in mind is that, you know, people talk about, well, you know, Google Glass, which I'm getting my Google Glass tomorrow, by the way.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Speaking of big dorky things, I will be going to get Google Glass. So the wristwatch and the Google Glass is not as much of an either-or proposition as people tend to frame it as. Wearable computing involves the services that happen offline. The idea of always having an intimate relationship with your device is something that's going to affect everything, including phones. It's going to blow back to phones. Some of the phones that have been announced or rumored that are coming up over the next year are essentially going to be wearable devices in the form of a phone. They're going to have the same kind of notification situation. They're going to involve much better battery management. They're going to be much better at giving you sort of this augmented reality view of the actual world and your actual context than phones have been in the past. So it's really the whole wearable thing and phones are all moving forward in the same direction, and that's the direction of awesome services like Siri and Google Now and all the things those services touch.
You know what gets me excited is the medical side of this. For some reason, I guess that's why I wear a Fitbit. This is my sleep pattern for the past week. I could see the average hours I've slept, the average number of times I awoke.
Looks like you sleep like a baby. You wake up every 2 hours screaming.
Yeah.
It's great.
Pretty
much. Nice.
It doesn't if it has sound sensor. But listen to who Apple, according to this story, have the companies Apple has rated for employees. AccuVane, which specializes in portable device sensors that map out veins in the body. C8 Metasensors, which makes non-invasive blood monitoring sensors. And Sensionics. I would buy that watch if it did one thing, if it gave me blood pressure readings. Well, I don't know if it could.
One of the more interesting things about this story, too, is that you look historically, Apple's biggest problem, and Guy English wrote this years ago, is retention. People in the original iPhone team have gone. People in the original iPad team have gone. Mark Zuckerberg's big pitch to Apple engineers is come with us. We're the new future. And then you look at the iWatch project, and reportedly it got Bob Mansfield to come back out of retirement. It got original iPhone engineers to return to Apple. It's the new star. It's the thing to be excited again. It's the thing that's going to, you know, the next thing that's going to dent the universe. And to put all that talent behind this kind of project and to focus it in this direction, I think for Apple as a company, is also hugely important.
Sensionics makes a thing you swallow that ties via Bluetooth to your phone, although it could also go to a wristwatch to give you glucose, real-time glucose measurements. So that's for a diabetic would be huge. No more pinpricks. It can display the rate and change of glucose, change graphical trends and alerts for impending hypoglycemia or hyperglycemia.
Well, you can look at as the aging population around the world. But
as an aging population myself, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, is having all of that, you know, in a fashionable
wrist piece. Well, I also think that Apple is very aware of the fact that its iPod, a lot of its iPod business, the way people interact with, you know, when people go running, they go to the gym or whatever, a huge percentage of these people have an iPod or some kind of Apple device. They, you know, in the Apple store, you can buy the thing that lashed the whole iPhone to your arm and stuff like that. People really want to use Apple devices for fitness.
Right.
And that's beyond the medical stuff, just fitness, just running and exercise and just daily fitness. So if they can add a bunch of sensors and be ahead of the curve on that, that'd be awesome. And then as they go forward and Moore's Law makes everything cheaper, they can add what I think is going to be the killer app for the iWatch, which is Siri.
I want to talk to it,
and I want it to talk back to me, and that's going to be incredible.
I'm not sure how that's better than a phone in your pocket, because it could do the same thing. Right?
I mean, I'm not sure that's... I'm just not sure that's a killer app for a watch. Using my glass for the past month, I mean, I think the coolest feature of it is this little thing right here, which people usually think is some sort of an activation button, but is actually like bone conductance. It doesn't actually have a speaker. It just basically tickles the back of your...
It works really well, too. It's surprisingly good.
It works well in noisy environments as a pickup and everything like that. And so it got me looking at different kinds of Bluetooth headsets, because you're absolutely right. And that Siri, a lot of the stuff that Glass can do could be done via Siri with an extra level of sophistication. But what you really want is not something that forces you to stop at the street corner and start doing this to look and interact and say, "Hi, Siri, could you please do this?" What you really want to be doing is to keep on walking. You don't want to have your eyes taken up by anything. You don't want to have your ears taken up by anything. So if they were to make like a Bluetooth headset that simply did not block the ear canal, Not only that, but because it doesn't block the ear canal, as you're walking down the street, people don't know you're even wearing this thing. But you can still communicate with the phone in your pocket and still get information back from it. That would, to me, be one of the most interesting Apple products of the past decade.
They're going
to
hire Andy to be on the team.
Well, so the funny thing for me is that I specifically in the city specifically wear headphones, yeah. Specifically to block everything else out.
Yeah.
Well, the other including oncoming trucks
and everyone
be careful crossing the street, dude.
Apple's got a history of accessibility, and if you're blind and you're wearing an iWatch and there's iBeacons in the building or in the park or on the hiking trail, that's the commercial you see at WWDC in Christmas time for a product like this.
Just in general, though, for wearable computing, Leo, you asked the question, is it that much better than a phone in your pocket?
Look at the rumors about Moto X always listening. You could talk to it presumably in your pocket and it would respond to you.
Yeah, but the point isn't that it's necessary. None of this stuff is necessary. These are like the firstest of first world problems that we're trying to solve here for the most part.
I think it's looking at a whole new way of computing.
Absolutely.
I think it's pretty significant.
I had the same argument for people before the iPad shipped, and it was like, what do you need that for? You have a laptop, you have a phone, you don't need an iPad, it's dumb. What's it? But when you use it, then you realize, oh, I get it. A lot of this is how it feels to exist in the world.
It's a new user interface.
It's a user interface, but it transforms your psychology. That's really the benefit. It's not that you need it or that it's that much better than a phone. In a practical sense, it changes the whole psychology.
We have seen how always-on information flows are valuable. I mean, look at Twitter. You've got Twitter scrolling by all the time on your computer. That is an information service that is, in effect, a ticker.
Right.
I think I would love information about my body,
about
news, about what's going on in the world around me. I watch sensors in a building, about my oven. You use an iGrill. I use an iGrill.
Yep.
I know what temperature the chicken breast is, what temperature the grill is.
Yep.
All of that stuff.
Siri, how do I feel right now?
Yeah.
Where
am I? Who am I? And what am I doing here?
Yes.
The real point is that the trend of computing is not necessarily making things smaller, but instead of having that one big home computer that sits on a desk in your living room and you have to walk up to and that has to do everything for you, is to break up that one $3,000 computer into maybe a dozen $100, $1,500, $500 computers, so that your phone is the reason why the iPad was such a difficult thing to imagine is that the secret wasn't simply a tablet computer that runs an operating system. It's the idea of what if we took away everything from this laptop that is not necessary from the context of a tablet app? What would we be left with? Just like glass is, what would we be left with if we were going to take away a phone is, what if we take away everything that is not necessary if you just want something in your pocket that just keeps you connected? Yeah. And then when you move on to the watch, what is necessary if all we want to do is to be able to collect data that's useful to the user and also have a bare amount of communication with that device? Because remember, this person already has a phone, they already have a tablet, they already have this other device. They're not going to be able, they don't want something that does those all those things. They want a tiny device that communicates. That projects just those core features into exactly where they want to go.
To your point, I wrote a column over the weekend and looking 5 years into the future, what it's going to be like to use computers, and it's going to be a lot like having an invisible friend. Your laptop's going to be listening, your wristwatch, your Google Glass, your tablet, your TV, your house, your car. It's all going to be listening. You're going to talk. You're going to basically mumble to yourself and hear voices in your head. We're all going to be like insane people walking around. But it's going to be awesome because there will always be like your invisible friend listening. And it kind of creeps people out to think about that, but it's going to be.
As long as you
don't
say it like that, it doesn't.
Well, yeah, it's the same thing with iOS and the cars. You're decoupling the experience from the hardware, and then you can do all sorts of fantastic things. Data goes from being pulled to being pushed, and suddenly it's wherever you need it to be.
Yeah, there you go.
This
answers the question we asked of the last segment. Is Apple a hardware company, a software company, or a services company? Something like this is all three and needs to be all three.
Yep.
The service has to be meshed with the hardware and the software.
Yeah, right? And the service is the hardest part.
And Apple, Andy, you said what? Classic Apple product.
That's a classic Apple product. If you took away the iTunes Store or iTunes or the unique hardware of an iPod, you would not have the same thing. It really is all three working together. And built from the ground up by a team that really is thinking of all three at the same time.
And Apple, if maybe the only company that has the cash, the will, the market to do something like this.
Mm-hmm. Samsung ain't going to do it. The freedom.
Google also does.
Google maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Google and Apple are really the only two super interesting companies at this time, chiefly because they both have enough deep pockets and they essentially have screw you money. meaning that it's not important to Apple that they have the number one phone in the market. They're making good profits. They have the ability to do whatever they want to do. So they don't have to make a big screen phone if they don't want to. Google, too, has enough money and also enough diversity in their business that they can do, well, what if we just make 10,000 units of Google Glass, put it out there, and what the hell? It might turn out to be something we want to pursue. It might not, but it's interesting enough that we want to pursue it. So that is the real buying power of having that kind of a checkbook.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting because everybody's saying, oh, Apple should buy Disney. Apple should buy the music industry. What should Apple do with $100 billion?
They're not under pressure to build huge market-busting products anymore. Right. They do want to do that. They're trying to do that. But it's not as though the next thing they make is going to make or break the company. It's just going to be the next thing they do, which is a wonderful place to be in for any tech company.
You can pretty much count on Apple to innovate it, Samsung to steal it, and...
And Microsoft to mess it up.
And Microsoft to say, we've got one too.
Yeah, coming next year.
I really like this idea. And I do think that if Apple thinks big enough, this could be huge. Yeah. Historically, Apple has in the past thought big. iPhone was a big thing and took years in the making, as we have learned. But lately, Apple seems to have been not so ambitious. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, compared to historically, from Mac to iPhone was a long period of time. From iPhone to iPad, which is a variation on iPhone, not as long a time. But they do think big, but it's not a year-after-year thing. I think that pace is unsustainable for anybody.
I think my view about Apple is that the reason they sort of raised our expectations because they did several earth-shattering things in a row.
And then they've been kind of...
Right. What they do is they find a horrible content consumption experience. Right. This is on the content consumption side. And then they fix it with a grand vision. They ship it and then they perfect it. And so they're still trying to perfect their vision for the iPhone, for example. They're not just launching every new thing, grabbing every new technology that comes out and just throwing it in for the sake of shipping it. And so it's going to be, the watch, the TV. I think these things are coming. And then when they do, then everybody will be talking about how innovative they are until they get into the perfecting mode, in which case they won't be innovative anymore. But that's not how they operate.
And not to disappoint, but it looks like this is not going to be something we'll see this year. It's a 2014 product.
That's what it looks like.
They're going to release the TV this year.
Oh, you're never. I am so skeptical on the TV, but okay.
That's
the watch
happen.
I get, and you're right. We're all wearing these fitness things, I mean, the watch I get, and boy, I'd love it if it would, tell my doctor, everything I need to know.
Yeah.
Right now, I use stuff from Y Things. I have a Y Things blood pressure and a scale, and I have the Fitbit, which has, as you saw, and it would be great to combine all that. I could send an email to my doctor with my blood pressure readings over a period of time.
Yep.
Be nice to be able to do all of that. What do you think, Renee Ritchie, the keeper of the rumors? You think Apple will announce this year? We've got presumably an event in September if they do it like last year, September and October.
Yeah, then they'll revamp pretty much everything again. I mean, the Retina
is that the new thing? Is like let's just do it once a year and we'll just do everything.
I don't know if it's a new thing or it's just the reality. I mean, Apple, they don't historically put products on the shelf for long periods of time. Making a thin iPad 5 and a Retina iPad mini are incredibly non-trivial things because you're balancing massive displays with light products, and it's not really the thinness that they care about, it's the lightness that they care about, with battery life. And they're not going to ship an iPad that has 5 hours of battery life. It's a non-starter. So it takes a certain period of time to get a new iPad design up to that, to being a viable product, and it takes a while to get the panel technology and the LED technology and everything to make a Retina iPad mini a viable product. And I think what we're seeing is just the realities of the changes Apple wants to make in those products are taking this long to get to market. And if they could have done it sooner, I don't think they would have waited. They would have done it in the spring.
Have said no iPad mini update this year. Is that, do you think, true?
From the last I heard, the mini Retina is still not ready. They could do a revamp of the non-Retina mini, which sounds like it's on the table. But whether they choose to do that or not, I guess will depend on how functional and how marketable they think it is. But, Apple's not really interested in getting us, to buy a new iPad every year. They're never market, what do we have to do to make the 2013 iPad so much better than the 2012 one that everyone will go and upgrade. They want to get new people who haven't bought before, and they want to get people who are 2 or 3 years out and are willing to upgrade. So the year-over-year difference won't be major, but if you look back 2 or 3 years, it'll be an impressive difference.
I mean, the iPad 4 is pretty much a done, cooked product. I don't know where you go you lighter. Make it faster and lighter?
Bigger.
Lighter and 13 inches. Lighter
is bigger. Now, so we're seeing, and I take this stuff with a little bit of grain of salt, but some of Apple's partners reporting Apple testing different size screens, like a 13-inch iPad screen.
And also a bigger iPhone. I think the bigger iPhone is, it's got to, they've got to do that. But it won't be huge. I think they're going to have a slightly bigger iPhone. They still
four
believe
and a half inches?
Yeah, something 16, like that. It'd be under five. Well, it'd be well under 5 inches for sure because they believe in the
exactly
one-handed
iPad
thing.
Scale. Like if you take the current iPhone and you blow it up to 4.99, it's exactly the panel they make for the Retina iPad right now. Yeah. Which would mean that Apple would have a dense iPad Mini, a less dense iPad, a dense iPhone, and a less dense iPhone on two different.
So that is a 5-inch screen. That's a 5-inch screen.
Yeah.
4.99. Boy, I'd be very interested in that. Yeah. I like the five is a good is to me is. Kind of the sweet spot on a phone.
Yeah. When the iPhone first came out, when the iPhone 5 first came out, it seemed reasonable. But with all these gigantic Android phones out there, it just seems tiny now.
This is a 5-inch screen. I don't think it's that – doesn't feel that big.
Yeah.
It's not –
That's
it's
a Galaxy
gigantic.
S4. No.
Yeah. I mean, that's Andy's just, explained
that's,
it.
It's not like a Galaxy Note, which is only half an inch bigger, and yet somehow
– But you do the thumb reach around the outside. It's quite a read. You want to go up to –
You do the iPhone 5, too. You're not going to one-hand an iPhone 5 unless you jog it around your hand a little bit.
I mean, the interesting thing with the larger screen iPhone is that right now there are people who are choosing between iOS and a larger screen because you can't get iOS on a larger screen. And, you know, to Apple's benefit, millions and millions of people are choosing to go with iOS on a 4-inch screen. But if they offer iOS on a bigger screen as well, then those people no longer have to make that decision. And instead of having one product that's a yes or no for people, suddenly you have two products and you increase the addressable market considerably for your devices.
And the other thing is that Apple's having problems moving the more expensive phones because people are just saying, oh, okay, it's all iOS is iOS. Let's just get the iPhone 4. Let's get the iPhone 4S. Let's save some bucks. But if you say, well, okay, fine, but let me show you this movie on this screen versus this screen, and suddenly they can find the extra $99 in their pocket.
We have seen, in fact, that those less expensive iPhones are selling surprisingly well, maybe even outselling the iPhone 5 in some cases.
Yeah, it's kind of a wake up call for us, isn't it? Yeah. Because we keep saying that it's improved and has a better radio and the camera's better, but there's so many people for whom this costs $100 more. I've got $99 in my pocket.
You know, and let's
forget about the amount of money it costs over the course of 2-year contract. But that people are really price sensitive. There's the factor of this is good enough. It's not the best, but this is good.
You know, but
enough
the difference
for me
between
is
the four. Difference between the 4 and the 4S. I mean, it pains me to know people are buying 4s.
Yeah.
Get the 4S, people. The 4S.
You want to stop them at the carrier store and hand them $100.
My wife still has a 4. I'm getting closer to an intervention.
Because of the camera. The camera is so good.
Yeah, exactly. That's incredible. I mean, I've been doing because I have a certain product that I'm under NDA for. I was going all over Hill and Dale yesterday, taking like side by side comparison pics with a phone. And
oh,
like,
do you have the Moto X? How do you like that?
What I like about the iPhone 5 is that it's slim but light. And so this morning I was dumping all these photos and looking side by side, and it's amazing. It doesn't matter how one of these phones has, let's just say, a rather remarkable image sensor and rather remarkable technology backing it up, but the iPhone 5 still. It may not necessarily be the best phone, the best camera on the market anymore, but for technology that debuted a year ago, next to all the greatest phones of the past 2 or 3 months, it's still it kicks the butt of all but one, and even so, it only loses to that phone in certain specific situations.
I think the iPhone 5 camera is overall better than any other camera on the market. There's some that do better in bright light, others that do better in low light, but none that do better in both.
You've admitted to having the 1020, haven't you, Andy?
I saw one at a press event last week. Oh. I might have had more experience since then. Certainly not something.
So that would be the.
I've been quite impressed by what I've seen of this phone so far.
That would be the big test.
And the nutty
thing
about
41 megapixel sensor.
Yeah.
The crazy thing about all that is that Apple put that sensor into a phone that's incredibly, almost needlessly thin. And what they managed to achieve in that Z index is crazy. Yeah. And it kind of makes you want to wish that Apple would make that iPhone Max with the $40 battery and the thick lens.
Yeah. What I want to see is I want them to forget about thinness, because if you put Apple's approach towards taking data off of an image sensor and assembling it into a really pleasing picture, and that's really what we're talking about, not just the sensor, not just the, you can source a sensor and you can source a lens from a whole bunch of different people. The idea of simply here is the data coming off of that lens. Now, is there information inside that shadow, or is that just dark shadow? Okay, well, how about this section here? Is that so bright we can't resolve anything out of it, or should we try our best to get some detail out of that shadow? Apple has knocked that cold so well.
I would like to see Apple do what Sony has been rumored to do, which is that Sony is rumored to have a lens. It's like a DSLR lens, standalone lens with the camera electronics built into the lens. And when you attach it to a phone, it uses NFC to turn that into the lens for the phone.
We've been talking about that on This Week in Photography for about 4 or 5 years.
Imagine if Apple did that. Yeah. How great that would be.
Would anybody care about that?
I mean, nobody would care.
The thing, as I'm writing up this interesting device that I'm under an NDA on, I'm exactly like you. I'm so like, oh, but I hope people care that the pictures are so much better with this camera phone rather than another device. Because there are already people who say, oh, well, I know that I'm expecting my first child in 8 weeks. I'm not going to buy a real camera. Look, I've just got my new like $99 with contract phone. It's got a camera and everything. It's like, no, it's your first child. Use a real camera. I will give you $300. Please buy a real camera.
And it's so funny. You take a real camera in, you know, with my two kids, I took a, you know, Canon 5D with, short depth of field. And they're like, you should go into that as a business. I was just taking like snapshots, you know, they were like, this is amazing, you know, because everyone else takes them with little cameras, you know, but what I would say is that the number one issue for the cameras, that's still a problem on the iPhone.
Speed.
Is low light conditions.
Oh, all right.
You know, I think the number one issue is low light conditions, and that's all they should be focusing on.
But that's expensive if you want
to
do that.
But they're also better than 90-something% of the market.
They are, but I'm just saying that that's the way you have something stand out. It's because, you know, taking pictures of your kids in your house in the evening, watching TV or something like that.
And yet, I bet that's how most people are doing it.
Yep.
And so the thing to acknowledge is that people are buying a camera phone as their primary camera.
But I'm saying that.
So how good can we get it?
Push that down the path of
if you could make the flash a thing of the past.
Yeah.
So you would never need it. That would be amazing.
Well, that would be a revolution.
Yep.
Because any camera, if you with an intelligent flash incorporated in it, the differences between those kind of pictures and the pictures with no fill flash, no stop motion, no nothing. I can't tell you how excited I would be if the only rumor that I heard about, not this year's iPhone, I think we all agree it's just going to be like a bump. It's not going to be a reinvention. But I can't tell you if the only rumor that I heard about the 2014 iPhone is that they decided to make it a third of an inch thick. I'm like, oh my God, we're going to see a great camera. We're going to see a big image sensor. We're going to see multi-elements. This is going to be great.
I'd be shocked if Apple does that.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm shocked that Nokia decided to go with this. I think it just becomes a specialty product.
I refer to it when in my preview of the 1020, I very happily refer to it as a ZFC design, ZFG design, stand for zero dams given. So I don't.
Yeah.
If you're a design walk, fine. Complain about this bump up for the lens. I don't care if that makes you happy, that the fact that this is a little bit thicker is going to upset you because of the aesthetics. That's great. We don't care.
But what,
our job is to make the best camera we can possibly.
The position Nokia is taking, and I think it's probably the correct one, is that what is becoming important is computational photography.
Yep.
So, in fact, that's what Jan-Peter Brodmo told me when he was here, is it's all about the fact that you've got two things, a big, powerful computer and a full-time internet connection behind that lens.
Right.
So let's get the lens to a certain point. But I don't know how far you have to go to get enough data into the camera that it can fix some of these other problems. I don't know. Can you make low-light photography work?
I
think for the average user, the iPhone 5 camera experience is already pretty darn awesome.
I think to me, it's not low-light. It's funny that you said that. Because to me, it's speed. It's the speed of launching the camera and the speed with which you can take pictures. And if you're taking pictures of little kids, it's just not fast enough. Right. For everything else, it's
iOS
almost
7
fine.
Yet, Leo? Have you tried it on iOS 7 yet?
No. Is it better?
Well, I can't say anything, but I would try it on iOS 7. They showed some demos on WWC. If you go back and watch them again, the camera demo is really good.
That's the that's the place to attack.
Yeah,
it's all software to me.
If you could do HDR really fast. That would be killer.
And what I'm surprised that someone hasn't done is, and maybe I'm not smart enough that this doesn't work. But the way Foveon works is, you know, Sigma uses Foveon sensors, and what they do is they stack the RGB. Mm-hmm. So they stack the RGB so that you're. And it produces a sharper image because really all of the images we look at are sharpened because of CMOS.
I really wish I could say something.
And that's what ruins them.
But so the CMOS, all the pixels are next to each other.
It's so frustrating.
Oh. You spend more time not talking about the Moto X than any...
I know. It's so frustrating.
So anyway, what you want...
That's a good idea, though.
Yeah, what you want is a Foveon sensor
it's a hell of an
mixed
idea.
With a CMOS sensor.
Never sign the NDA.
I did ask, is it a Foveon sensor? And they said, first of all, they said, what the hell are you talking about?
Right.
They didn't know what that meant.
Right.
Good sign.
And they said, you know what? You don't look like at all like David Pogue to me. I have a picture of him.
So anyway, I'm saying that's a great idea.
Is that a great idea?
That's a great idea. And But the point being that I think there are ways to get better performance out of little thin, crappy 50-cent sensors. And then... Yeah. Put it through this powerful computer because there's no denial. These things are really powerful computers now.
Yeah. I have to admit, I keep posting photos
from my Google Glass to my Google Plus account, and people are routinely amazed at the image quality. And what they have to explain is that number one, the software automatically senses the need to do HDR and will apply it automatically. And secondly, by the time it goes up to Google Plus, remember that one of the big things they announced at Google I/O was that they have sort of an auto magic enhance that goes into all Google Plus photos that has to be turned off, not turned on, and that basically so it's okay that this device has this tiny 5-megapixel sensor, so long as there's software that can again take those numbers off the sensor and put them develop them into something wonderful.
And having you mentioned that the 1020 is nobody's going to buy it. If that was an Android phone, a lot of people would buy it.
Oh yeah,
it should have been.
The only thing wrong with it is that it's Windows.
I'm not saying that no one would buy it. What I'm saying is that I hope that the people don't care thing is going to flip both ways.
Yeah.
Because I hope there are people who will come into an AT&T store and see these three phones and say, well, you know what? I hear your argument that iOS software is better. I hear your argument that the Android marketplace is really, really big. Really, I really don't need a 500,000 apps. I need 10. Oh, Windows Phone has those 10. Great. Then I don't care. Give me the one with the big phone with a great camera. I hope that happens. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, though.
And to go back to Leo's point, I mean, one of the reasons Apple makes their own chipset is because they put a digital signal processor in that.
That's
and they're
right.
making a new chipset this year. And, you know, traditionally, Phil Schiller's had his whole photo segment and it's something they care deeply about. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, like that photo commercial earlier in the year showed, they put a lot of attention into the image processing again.
Yeah. We're 30 minutes away from Apple's quarterly update. It's quarterly report. Anybody have anything to say? You predict this is a good time to predict. The horses are in the gate. The little greyhound, the little bunny is ready to go. What do you think?
Disappointed. Apple will be doomed.
A lot of analysts say, the analysts' predictions are all over the map, more so than usual this quarter.
I can't imagine that they're going to be surprisingly good.
I guess that's the question. Are there going to be surprises at all?
I think it'll be vaguely disappointing.
whether it's successful or not, it will be termed in the media as disappointing. Apple will be doomed.
Exactly.
That they have not sold, that they've not introduced tons of new products already this year, that it's the downswing before the traditional fall upswing will largely go ignored, and we will have a bunch of people manipulating the market to their own benefit, and it'll be just another Tuesday.
That sounds exactly right.
Yes. Agreed.
But so, and we don't care about any of that. What we do care about is what it tells us about the company and what the company's up to and what little tidbits Apple leaks out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing to listen to the analyst call to see what Tim Cook comes on and says, yeah, by the way, we should expect some interesting new products in September or something like that.
Yeah.
Pulling on strings.
I love the criminology of it. I know Andy hates it. But I love it. I love to sit there and say, oh my gosh, he used the word XYZ or whatever.
Right.
And that means that they're going to be buying Tesla, or something.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
I do think we're going to hear the phrase, that's a very interesting space and we're observing it quite closely.
Yes.
I think we're going to hear that.
You should watch what we're doing.
Yeah. All the threads are being pulled.
All the threads are being pulled. Sounds like Apple's pulling a lot of threads right now.
I think we'll see them like wear like special like extra long cuffs. So that I don't want to see the shape of the tan line that I've developed on this wrist. You know, I don't want to see a semicircle and then a big triangle.
So we should. There's the chronology. Yeah. What do the tan lines look like?
That's
significant. That looks like an up tan line. No, I'm pretty sure that's a fuel band tan line. See, it's slightly indented. Well, we'll find out.
Gene Munster will ask about a television, and Tim Cook will hit the question back at him like he talked about his mother. It'll be just like last quarter.
Munster is the only guy still talking TV.
And he'll stop the week before Apple announces it. That'll be the tragedy.
Yeah,
of
he'll say, yeah, I guess they're not doing a TV. I give up. I am now more and more. I was skeptical even on the watch. But seeing if these reports are true about the team they're putting together, seeing it be as much a fitness device, that really intrigues me, the biomed stuff.
The thing that is intriguing to me about smartwatches is that everyone is doing one. What do they know that the rest of us don't know? I mean, everyone.
Well, I would give up.
They're just looking at Apple.
I would give up the watch I have. I mean, arguably, my watch would cost about as much as an Apple Watch, and I would give it up in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
you know, for something that would keep me connected.
That's right.
I think it's interesting. Most a lot of companies are getting into it because I've talked to a couple of people about this. Used to run very large companies. They were telling me about the. It's easy to tell yourself that the math is correct. There's given the effects of known celestial objects, there should be a planet we can't observe right there. So let's start firing a rocket ship to land there because the math says there's a planet there we can land on and start harvesting an obtainium from. and there's sometimes products that are like that where people think that they're. The math says that people would want a watch. The timing says that with people adopting these highly personalized devices and these highly intimately connected devices, the math – I have a spreadsheet, blank, 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 that says there must be a market for smartwatches at this point. We got to get in there with our 1.0 product so that the 2.0 product will be there to grab those money with both fists.
And I agree with that. And also to the point is that there are going to be two kinds of smartwatches. They're going to be the kind that are like – you know, the Pebble or some of these others that are sort of open and can function with any major phone. And then there are going to be the others, the iWatch, the Google Watch, the Samsung Watch, possibly the Microsoft Watch, that are going to lock you into that company's stuff. Yeah. And so if you're in the bit, you know, if you're Apple, you don't want people using the Google Watch.
Right.
Because
right.
there goes Siri.
Right.
And you don't want them to use the Pebble either because you want them to use the Siri watch or the one that's going to become the Siri watch. So there's a game that's being played there between, you know, ecosystem, I don't want to say lock-in, but ecosystem support that companies like Apple have to be aware of.
Why not say lock-in?
I mean, okay, let's say lock-in.
I'm comfortable saying that. I mean, I think that Apple could make just like Apple's perfectly happy making iPhones and iPods and copies of iTunes that work fine on all systems because it serves them very well to make sure that people can buy the phone. They don't want to just sell a phone to 8% of the marketplace. They want to sell it to everyone who's not using, you know, Linux.
Look at our
two
best examples. We have the Sony Watch. They have their own development program. People are not writing for the iPhone. They're writing for the Sony. Yeah. And then you look at Google Glass. Google Glass is basically Google Now that you wear on your head. That's what it is.
They went so far as during Google I.O. to have an entire session saying how to void your warranty on Google Glass.
I love it.
Explained, here's, if you want to run Ubuntu on it, that's really dumb. But fine, here's how to put Ubuntu on Google Glass.
It's a computer.
But yeah, but I think that if Apple were to do a watch, there's no chance whatsoever it would work with anything that is not running iOS. And that's like one of the reasons why the more I think about it, and we've all been talking about this endlessly for about a year, the less I think that it's going to be what we imagine to be a color touchscreen watch face sort of thing. Yeah. I really do think it's going to be something more like the Fitbit, where Apple can even afford to create a less expensive product that works with more services.
But it will evolve into that. And there's going to be, you know, once you go down the path of embracing one of these devices, you're probably going to stick with it for several generations. So, you know, I don't think there's any question that in 3, 5, 10 years that wearable computers are going to be everything we imagine. They're going to have little Princess Leia things popping up in the hologram and they're going to, you know, cure cancer and all that stuff. So they want to get you started on their their watch.
Here's the possible incendiary comment. If we're thinking about a wristwatch as like a color screen like this, is this a little bit like when Microsoft was envisioning a future of tablet computing as here is Windows XP running on a tablet?
Yes.
I just don't think we have the imagination to figure out. No, we don't.
Maybe it's a nipple clamp.
Nipple clamp.
Most people wear those as it is. So that's a very easy transition point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's going to be something that we are not going to. It's not going to be a smaller version of an iPhone on a wrist. It's going to be something more interesting.
That's absolutely true. It's always going to be a narrower pipe than our other devices. But a screen makes a whole lot of sense if they can get the battery life down, because it's essentially extends this, you know, there's no such thing as too much screen real estate to a certain extent. I mean, that solves the problem of Apple having a smaller phone. You have a smaller phone and then another square inch or so on your wrist that enables you to divide the load, the visual load of what you look at and where you look at it and stuff like that. So I think, you know, really high resolution screens are coming to watches, whether they come out in the first generation or not from Apple. There certainly will on the other devices. So I think, you know, I think we're heading for a world in which, you know, there'll be, you know, batteries all through the band, a high resolution screen, curved glass and the whole bit. And they're going to do a narrow subset of things in a really high quality, high fidelity sort of way.
I mean, and it's probably not wrong to look at the Apple TV model, where the Apple TV comes out as a little box and it goes on your television, and it really only works if you have the rest of Apple's ecosystem supporting it. So it's not really useful to anybody else. And then over time, there's rumors of it becoming a full-blown television with an SDK, but it takes a long time to get there. And that history has taught us that. The first iPad changed the way we thought of tablets, but it wasn't great on its own. It became great with iPad 2 and then iPad mini and iPad 4. The original iPhone, it took Apple 3 or 4 years to get the hardware to the point that they could start writing the software that they wanted for mobile devices. And I don't see the watch being any different. We'll get a first implementation that's like an Apple TV that does very limited things, but changes the game enough to maybe mainstream the technology. Then over time, it gets more powerful, longer battery life, and Apple can start treating it as a software platform. And that's, you know, 3-4 generations down the road.
One more story, and then we're going to take a break and get our tips of the week. The Apple developer site still down. Apple a little more communicative about what's going on. I just got this image from Apple when I went to developer.apple.com and clicked the iOS Dev Center. We'll be back soon. They've been down since Thursday, so it's almost a week. Last Thursday, an intruder attempted to secure personal information of our registered developers from the developer website. Sensitive personal information was encrypted and cannot be accessed. By the way, I'd like to know more about that. Was it encrypted? Was it salted? How was it encrypted? Remember, if they've got the data, they've got time to brute force it. So encrypted alone is not necessarily sufficient. It's a start, but we'd like to know how. However, we've not been able to rule out the possibility that some developers' names, mailing addresses, and or email addresses may have been accessed. Names, mailing addresses, and or email addresses. Doesn't mention passwords.
Mm-hmm.
In the spirit of transparency, we want to inform you of the issue. We took the site down immediately on Thursday and have been working around the clock since then in order to prevent a security threat like this from happening again. We're completely overhauling our developer systems. Sounds like they're rewriting it as we speak, updating our server software, and rebuilding the entire database. We apologize for the significant inconvenience our downtime has caused you. This is a bad time when you're in the midst of iOS beta coming real close to the release date.
Yeah.
This is about the worst time that could be down. Yeah. If your program membership was set to expire, it's been extended, et cetera. One researcher, UK-based Ibrahim Balich, claims that he found this hole. He says he unearthed 13 bugs in the system, highlighting a hole that could leave data from the developer center exposed. Balich claims he showed Apple 73 user accounts from its own workers to illustrate the flaw when he contacted them to help them fix it. He says he was able to get data from more than 100,000 users. He says, and boy, I'd stay in the UK right now, Ibrahim. Maybe go somewhere. I don't know. How is Ecuador sound?
Ecuador embassy.
He maintains he did not hack the system for malicious purposes. He did get 100,000 users information, though. Apple viewed his access as a security breach. Oh, surprise, surprise. And shut down the developer center. So he's saying he's the guy who caused this shutdown.
This is really, we're all taking this guy's word for it. Only he said that Apple shut it down because of him.
Right.
I think there's a possibility that that's that's probably the case, that, that he alerted them to this problem, but they may have looked into it and found,
right,
you know, lots of people running in there. Maybe there have been hundreds of people who have exploited that bug. Maybe there haven't been. But
could be he's just looking for publicity. We don't know.
He's clearly a publicity hunting type of person, right, given his track record. So we really, really don't know. And we're, you know, what happens in the absence of information is everybody will jump on whatever data they have. And this guy filled the void with lots of information about what he did. So I really don't know that that's it's possible that they're not even related, in fact.
Well, but yeah, that's what I thought too. And the money, the key phrase there is rebuilding the database, and yeah, that certainly says they're re-encrypting everything using a totally entirely new technology.
Well, this gets,
or, excuse me, for them anyway. Sorry,
and this gets back to if you're on the internet. I mean, one thing that I used to not be very good at, and I've become kind of religious about, is when you think about your passwords, you know, making sure that you don't have a single password.
Yeah, change password, you know, for every site.
And you got it, whether it's one password or LastPass, you know, you want it generating a totally random code, mm-hmm, you know, and into that, rather than you trying to think of something that reminds you of your, you don't want it to remind you of anything, because right, most of the, many times getting into this is more of a social process than a technology process of, you know, how they hack into something. And so... We use LastPass because we can share passwords. Like, our big thing is we never want to email a password or text a password to each other. So we, you know, want to have a central place that lets us move things back and forth between each other. And so, but otherwise one password. But I mean, this kind of stuff, every time I see one of these, I'm like, you know, it's because, and you want to think about it for your whole company, because any one person who's not doing that, you know, is a weak link.
Yeah. There was a hilarious scene in the most recent Dexter, where Dexter was trying to guess his sister's password, and she has a notoriously foul-mouthed way of speaking. And so he guesses the word password as her password. Didn't work. So he tried effing password right in, second try.
That's actually probably pretty good, yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
But you're right. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're gonna take a break and come back with your picks of the week, gentlemen, so prepare. Meanwhile, I'll tell you about Shutterstock.com. Yesterday, my daughter, who's working on a thing for school, needed to make a poster, and I said, I could give you some images. You know, she said, well, it's for psychology. I said, just search for emotions on Shutterstock.com, and you can find all sorts of things. Shutterstock is an amazing collection of royalty-free stock photos, illustrations, vector arts, and video. Here's just happy. See, put that on your poster, Abby, right there. That's happy. And you turn it upside down, it's sad. Happy birthday. Look at that. So if you are a blogger, if you are a videographer, by the way, great video stuff too at Shutterstock.com. Just click the footage tab and you'll see 1.1 million royalty-free stock videos. You'll see they have on the site the stats, and I just love to look at these because they add, you know, stuff every week. You can sign in. Don't need a credit card to make a free account, and I encourage you to do this. 27.8 million royalty-free stock images. They added 155,000 new images this week. They're on a pace of more than 20,000 images a day at Shutterstock.com. Give it a try. Make a free account. The iPad app is spectacular. Webby award-winning. It's just beautiful. Inspiration, if you have an account, free account, you can create light boxes and save images for later use or just for inspiration or to share with a colleague or friend or client. They have the spectrum tool that lets you choose by color so you can make sure it goes perfectly with the color palette that you're using. There's every week a free photo of the week worth just for that alone. Here's the deal. You can try this for free. You don't need a credit card. But if you decide you want to take advantage of one of their image packages or the subscription, that's what I have, you should use our offer code MacBreak7 to save 30% off on your new account. 30%! MacBreak and the number 7. That 7 is for the month of July. It changes every month. So since we're in July, use MacBreak7. They'll know you heard it on MacBreak Weekly during the month of July. Even if you're listening in August, use MacBreak7. And we thank Shutterstock for their support of Mac Break Weekly. You're going to love it. All right, time for our tips of the week. And I'm going to let you guys go, but I got in the mail, I got a bunch of these. They came out on Monday, and everybody's been talking about this Leap controller. Uh-huh. This is the one where you... So what I'm going to do while you guys are talking is this is one fresh in the box. The first one I tried did not work. It wouldn't calibrate.
You're holding it wrong.
It's weird. You put it right here. I'll show you. But anyway, we'll give you a demo of it. But I'll start installing it now and let Andy Nako kick us off with his pick of the week while I do this.
This is something really, really cool from SanDisk. It's called the Wireless Media Drive, I think.
Oh, it's tiny.
Wireless Media Drive, yes. What this is it's like one of the coolest things to have if, like me, you rely on your iPad for, like, your main travel computer. What this is this is a Wi-Fi base station with built-in 64 gigabytes of flash storage in it. So essentially, you can hook this up via USB to your desktop, put whatever you want on it, media files, documents, photos, anything. And then from your iPad, from your iPhone, from your Android device, anything like that, there's an app that will simply let you browse all the contents and actually use them. Neat. So let's say that you've just obtained a 1.1 gigabyte high definition public domain movie file from an internet source. And you want to be able to watch it like in your hotel room when you travel, but you don't have to. Oh God! Now I'm gonna have to import it into my iTunes library, then connect up my iPad, then sync it over with this. Nope, just copy it over to this. You'll be traveling with 64 gigabytes worth of media and stuff on it, and then whenever you want to watch it, you can stream it directly from there. And things like photos and documents, you can open them with the related device, and it works fine. That's okay. So that's cool. That's already pretty cool because there's so much of the storage that I have on my iPad and on my phones is for stuff that I'm not necessarily going to be listening to every day or watching every day, but I want it available just in case. So this will let you offload all that stuff onto storage, which is great when you're using devices that don't have expandable storage. Okay, awesome enough. Awesomeness number two is a standard SD card slot.
So it's like a reader.
See, exactly. So that you put anything that will fit into an SD card into this. So even your micro SD, mini SD cards into there. And then now that will actually appear inside that same reader app. And so now you can just pop the card out of your camera or out of any other device, pop it in there. And now your iPad can take all of those photos from there.
It's a camera and connection kit.
Only it works. That's the great thing. It actually works.
Can also be used as a beverage coaster.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for like Manhattan's maybe.
It's small. Yeah, it's small.
For a small beverage thing. It has a built-in battery that lasts about 8 hours of access, I think. But I mean, because the problem with just last week I was in Philadelphia and I wanted to take some photos and some videos off of my glass and import them into my iPad so I could post them. And this has USB. It'll appear to any operating system as a standard camera. But as usual, the camera connection kit that is used, that's made by Apple to connect a camera to the iPad, 9 times out of 10, even if it's an SD card, will say, I'm sorry, this device is not compatible with it. Or, I'm sorry, but this device uses too much power. I'm not going to let you use it. And so it's absolutely useless.
It says it just that way.
Exactly. I'm not going to apologize to you. Okay. Mike, the camera connection kit is supposed to let you connect a camera? Screw you. You don't understand. You don't understand what it's like to be an iPad. People always ask me to connect cameras. Oh, I've had it. So essentially, it's
more angry. In other words, you're saying it's not lisping; it's angry.
It's petulant.
I don't like camera rejection kit.
Petulant and
rejection.
Camera abuse. Camera argument clinic. That's not a camera. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. It is so.
It's not an argument. Yes, it is.
So yes. So this is. It's $99. So for 64 gigabytes of just walking around storage, that's so small and doesn't require any power. That's already very, very awesome. But the fact that you will have absolutely no problems taking any file that is on an SD card and introducing it to your iPhone or your iPad, or again, maybe you're a multi-platform ecumenical household and you do have Android devices, same device will work just fine. There's only one real drawback to it, and that is that this is a Wi-Fi connection. So while you are connected, while your iPad is connected to this, that is its Wi-Fi connection. So if you're in the hotel room, you ordinarily will lose your connection to the internet while you're connected to this. So if you've got like a 2-hour movie that you're watching, that's a problem. However, the app does have sort of a workaround so that you can use this as a pass-through, so that essentially this device is connected to the internet and now your iPad is connected to the device. So your iPad is connecting to the device to the internet through the device. So it's not as simple as it should be, but it does work. I've had this for about a week now, and it's just it really works as well as you'd like it to. So good stuff.
The SanDisk Connect 32G wireless media drive streaming on the go.
They also make a flash drive version of it that's 32 gigs and has its own like little flash drive version of it.
That's
less expensive. But same principle. It turns into a Wi-Fi base station and lets you connect and use all that file. So great stuff.
That seems like that would be something to carry instead of your flash card reader.
Yeah, so, and the thing is, it's no bigger than a flash card reader either. So,
right.
I mean,
right.
Easy win.
Good deal. All right, so I'm going to do a quick unboxing, then we're going to get to our next tip. This is the Leap Motion. You've heard a lot about it. They raised something like $40 million over the last 3 years. The idea being, could you have it over the shoulder, Chad? The idea being that it would be, we'll see, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, so.
SanDisk? Did I just pick that?
Yeah. No, this isn't from SanDisk. It looks the same, though, doesn't it? It's more like a lozenge. I know.
Thing.
It's more, yeah, but it's very similar.
Only yours doesn't have an SD card reader, Leo.
No, it doesn't. So you have to activate it at leapmotion.com/setup. It's similar. Similar. And the other thing that's interesting, comes with two USB cables. They're proprietary. They're not standard. I don't think they're standard. Maybe they are. What is that connection on the end? I've seen it before. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it is standard.
It's USB 3.
That's USB 3? Okay. So it's a USB 3 cable. There's a short one and a long one. I will download the software, and we will continue with the installation, hoping that by the end of this show, I will have a working Leap Motion. I'm watching the video right now and getting started with the Leap Motion. That's as you download. They play this as you download the software.
Does it play any music?
It does. Hi. Welcome.
You had to have happy.
All right, your pick of the week, Mr. Mike Elgin.
Okay, so we were talking about fitness apps and stuff like that. One of the things I've discovered living as a nomad is that it's very difficult to sign up for a gym.
Yes. Sure.
And so, sure. What do you do if you want to exercise and you live in all kinds of random things, or you travel too much, or you just don't like gyms? There are lots of fitness apps available for iOS, and most of them are not that usable. You sort of wander away after a while because they don't really work. But my cousin introduced me to one called You Are Your Own Gym. Now, this is a popular it's a popular book, and it's a fitness program that involves no equipment. It's all body weight type exercises. And what's great about it is that it shows you exactly, like, takes you through or drives you through or pushes or you through all these workouts, and it tells you exactly how long to rest, exactly how many reps to do, exactly what to do. And it takes you through. There's a six-week program. You can save workouts. You can customize your own workouts. So let me show this to you. If we could do the overhead on this one.
It's up here.
Are we going to work out?
So this is an example of a fairly advanced workout. And this is just you say, okay, start the workout.
One rep on each side.
So it's like having a personal trainer who will actually demonstrate
one-arm
everything.
One-arm push-ups? Are you doing one-arm push-ups?
No, like I said, this is the advanced. I want to skip it because the beginning one is like very, right, very beginning.
Right. Look at that.
As you can see, it's high-def video that shows you exactly.
It looks good, yeah.
Yeah, exactly how to do
exactly
it.
Exactly what you can't do.
And when you're done, right, you just say complete. It tells you how long
and
to rest.
It counts you down.
And then it keeps track of your progress. It does everything you want it to do.
This looks like high-intensity circuit training, sort of. It's pretty high-intensity.
It becomes so, but at the beginning level, it starts very, very slow with very basic exercises and takes you up to these levels. It's at $299, and so say you complete it.
I can't try something else, but it's got pull-ups, military press, and let me up.
But that's just this exercise.
Is that where a young lady sits on your back and tries to pee?
Yes, it is, Leo.
I can't wait.
Yeah,
I can work my way up to
that's
that.
That's advanced. Huh? It comes, as you can see, it comes with its own incentives.
I want to do a let me up.
Yes.
Help me.
So anyway, this is a $299. It's called You Are Your Own Gym.
I like it.
It's available for all iOS devices, and it's just a fantastic app for staying in shape without any equipment.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank
Except
you, Mike Elgin.
You need a chair.
I use my kids.
Yeah, right.
If you grab them by the ankles, you can do great triceps.
What's great is you get stronger as they grow.
Exactly. Sure. You have to keep up. You have to do it every day.
That's right.
Or you're, yeah.
And eventually they'll be doing that to you.
Yes, exactly.
So,
Alex Lindsay, you give us your pick of the week.
Okay, I have one little pieces of hardware and then one software pick.
All right.
So one of the things that I have found in my travels, I do a little bit of traveling,
mm-hmm.
is there are two things that I really you really want to have. Number one is those little square chargers that you get with your iPhone. Just throw those out. So they're just totally worthless. So
They work.
They work, kind of. So you really want to get something that is 3.1 amps. And the reason you want 3.1 amps is you want to be able to hook two things in. There's no use to use a plug.
You can get 3.1 amps?
Well, it's two different connections. So one is for your iPad and
that's
iPhone.
1 amp.
But you just put your iPhone into it as well. I mean, never put, but the point is.
So there's one 2.1 and one 3.1.
One's 2.1 and one's 1.
Right. So a total of 3.1. Yes.
Look at this guy. So this little one, it's like, doesn't cost very much. It's a box wave. And that goes into your lighter.
Yeah, that's tiny, very handy.
And it's two connections, and one of them is going to be a fast connection for your iPad or a super
that's
fast
great.
Connection for your iPhone. And that's the smallest one I've found. I mean, I bought all of them.
Right.
So just to try to figure it out. I've kind of gotten to this mode, so my picks are going to be connected to me oftentimes buying like six different of them. And then collate one.
That's why
I'll tell you on
we
Mac
have you. That's
so
good.
Anyway. So that I got all of them, and that was the best one.
That's
and
the
then
box
this
wave.
Is PowerGen.
This looks a little bit like the that little snap thing that changes the.
Yeah. So it's also 3.1.
Oh, I see. What snaps off is the adapter
cool
for international.
About that. Yeah. And here's what's cool about the international thing. If you pull this off, all this is a two prong, that you get with every Sony product or whatever. So you can buy that anywhere.
Right.
So you need to connect something. You don't have to go find, this connector.
The special connector.
Right. You literally pull that off. And I've used it now in a couple different countries.
Right.
And a good example is like finding the perfect one to work with in, for instance, South Africa is always hard because those are the massive ones. But it's $15, and you can get it in black or white.
It's cool. $15.
Yeah, and it's and it's great. And you're constantly plugging in two things at one time rather than one.
Andy
and one
had something like this last
really
week, which I bought, by the way, Andy. and you said it had a fold-up. This also has fold-up. It's a little bigger than the one that you mentioned.
That one was actually something that I was going to make a pick of the week 3 or 4 weeks ago until I found out that the one that I had was basically one of those. I think you have the exact same one. I didn't want to recommend that specific name brand because it's just one of these things that's manufactured overseas, and then a lot of people will import them and put a sticker on it.
That's why it's
$15. But yeah, I agree. That's a. I have one. It's a very
handy.
Thing.
It's been very. I mean, I use it every day.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy with it. And then my software pick just because I've been trying to do ones that are more consumer like these, and then I don't think that I have recommended this before, but. This is kind of like the secret app for people who do big presentations.
Right.
So, and I've been noticing a lot of people surprised, like they always look over your shoulder, and you either see it everywhere or people are asking you about it if you don't see it. And that is, and I may have talked about it before. I can't remember. I looked through the Mac picks. I couldn't find it. It's called Playback Pro.
I don't think so.
And it is this. It's a silly app, but it is what everybody uses that are doing big presentations and what a lot of people use. So if you're doing if you want to play back video, all it does is it plays back video. It plays it back great, and it always works. And you can build playlists and play them back. You can put transitions in there. You can decide you want them to freeze or not. It's the website is, really nasty. It's like built in 1999. DT Video Labs is the ones that make it. And it's not a particularly pretty application. But I just have to say every stage event that I go to now, when they're either using one called Lookout or Playback Pro, and Playback Pro is, I think it's like $300 for the base version and $600 or $700 for the plus version, which is what we use.
Mm-hmm.
But Lookout is like $30,000. And so, so it's like a whole different, and to be honest with you, we have more trouble with people using Lookout than Playback Pro because Playback Pro is simple. Mm-hmm. And it just does what it does, and it does it really well. You can set your ins and outs. You can set it to loop. You can, and it also it takes over your second monitor, so you can just tell it what resolution you're sending it out, as.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a very professional way to play stuff for presentations or play it into your switcher or something, if you're doing a podcast or a live event, and you want to play stuff into the live event, it's just a great piece of software. So anyway, I think it is about an Alex for the Playback Pro Plus. I think
700 is an Alex.
Yeah. So
have you looked at Logic Pro 10 yet? Came out last week, $200.
So I haven't looked at it yet because my main computer here is still on an older operating system.
You can't download it.
And so I couldn't download it. I'm going to put it on another computer, and by next week I'll have some opinions.
Good.
I think it looks great on the Surface.
Yeah, I haven't been able to play with it, but I'm going to get my son to mess with it.
When I was traveling, last week I couldn't get it downloaded, so I'm going to download it while I'm here.
Yeah, it's like 40 gigs.
Oh, that wasn't the problem. It was literally just that I just didn't have a computer that I could put it on.
Yeah.
So I keep... I keep older operating systems because when we're some of our live events, some of the software can be. I'd like to have two versions of everything.
Mr. Rene Ritchie from iMore.com, what's your pick of the week?
So I, too, have two smaller picks, one for iOS, one for OS X. The one for iOS is called Bugshot. It's Marco Armont's weekend project where he was doing a lot of bug reporting for iOS 7 apps, and he wanted a quick way, almost a sketch-like way to do it. So with this, you have a screenshot, and you can very quickly just annotate a line, or you can choose a box and put a box over what you want to do. And if you have any personal information or naughty bits that you want to cover, you can very quickly put a blur mask on it. And then you just share it. So if you see an error in iOS 7 rendering or anything on any app that you're either working on as a developer or are a consumer of and want to report to the developer, this lets you get in, take a screenshot, annotate it immediately, and send it back out. And it's been very helpful. As you know, we were working on our iOS 7 version of the iMore app, and I have a lot of friends who are developers working on it. So very quick, very small, very specific app. But if you need to do that task, it's excellent for it. It was just updated to 1.1, which adds the blur mask and fixes a few of the little bugs.
Is it free? So
it's like 99 cents, I believe.
One of the coolest parts of that app is the icon.
Yes.
Because there's, why don't you tell the story, Renee?
So the icon is a result of a rendering bug when he was incorrectly, because of the way that Core Graphics renders vector shapes, it inverted it, and he decided he liked it so much he kept it as the icon.
That's good. It's a bug for sure. That's great.
Absolutely.
Divine ordinance sometimes.
And what's your second pick?
The second pick is similar. There was a Mac app called Little Snitch.
Little Snitch is great.
And it's been reborn as, not Little Snitch, I think. It's been reborn as Ember, either way, from Real Mac Software. So you can, it's basically a quick way.
Oh, Little Snapper you're talking about.
Little Snapper, yeah. I apologize. I had Skitch on my brain.
Yeah, Little Snapper is so cool. And this is their new thing.
This is the next generation, the new version. It just came out today. It's on the Mac App Store now. You take all your photos. It's just a super fast, super good way of doing whatever you used to do with Little Snapper, but in the next generation sense.
It's a screenshot tool, kind of.
Yeah, so it's a way to kind of take all your photos. It's beyond screenshots now. It's just almost all the photos you want. Yeah, and scrapbook them, journal them, put them in a place, quickly annotate them, share them, organize them, find them. And it's got that, you know, Real Mac does Clear. They do a ton of really good software. And this is that same sort of attention to detail and user interface brought to the scrapbooking photo collection space.
Very nice.
I've only played with it for a couple hours today, but I had a lot of fun with it.
I think Don McAllister recommended Little Snapper. I was looking for a screenshot program, and he recommended that, and I'll have to try Ember.
Well, both these apps, one of the reasons
Is Little Snapper still out?
No, I believe Ember replaces it.
This Ember replaces it. Okay.
Yeah. And one of the things is you take screenshots and you intend to go back and do something with them, but you forget. And then you go back and why did I take the screenshot? What was wrong with it? And with both Bugshot and with this, you can just quickly put enough stuff into it and deal with it immediately that you never have to go back. And especially if you're someone like a blogger or a developer who accumulates my photo stream is almost nothing but screenshots right now.
Yeah.
And you try to look back a week later, you have no idea why you took them. So being able to organize and catalog them rapidly is a real lifesaver.
People thought it's $50. It's a little expensive, but people said the same thing about Little Snapper. But I got to tell you, if you're a book author, I was doing presentations for Mac Mania. If you're doing a lot of screenshots, it was worth every penny of it.
Yeah.
Really great.
If you're getting paid more than, you know, if you're getting paid a good salary to do this kind of stuff, your time is so much more valuable than your money that you will gladly throw, you know, $200 for Logic. We're discussing Logic Pro 10 last week, and $50 for this, or, you know, Napkin was the same way for me. I use it every day, and the amount of time it saves me is so much more than the money that it's equally valuable.
All right, here we go. It's time to try the Leap Motion. This is the software's installed. It says below a few tips. You plug it in. It's a USB 3. It doesn't have to have a USB 3 port. It works on USB 2. You put it somewhere in front of your thing. So now it's asking me to plug it in. Let's see. I'm going to plug it in are both of these ports USB 3? I can't remember on that.
I think they are.
It doesn't matter, though, supposedly. Okay, firmware update in progress. Okay, now it's doing something. It's doing Leap Motion.
Like Al Capone's Vault.
Ooh. Now, this one's working, which is nice. I couldn't get the other one to do this much. This is where it sees. To begin, wave hand over device. You want my... Yeah.
Music is great. That music is great for waving hands.
Okay, yeah. Now look. I guess it's
you
seeing my hands.
Are empowered.
Oh, I see. Up over here.
You can achieve what you go to see.
Zombo.com.
People like you.
Zombo.com. Okay, that's nice. Now what?
Blow up.
There's a whole app store associated with this. What do I do now, Zombo? Help me. Do I just do this for a while?
No. Oh, wait. You skip step three. Get really, really stoned before plugging it in.
Let me press the escape button. Okay, good. Okay, now we
my
can go.
My fingers are touching the computer without touching it, man.
There and
what
so
does it mean?
I should have signed up for this and I haven't yet. So I will sign up for this. Actually, I think I have a. You could have sent me a login, but anyway. But there are apps, there are games and so forth associated with it. Yeah, here it is. All right, don't show this because I'm going to do the special media password here.
This is really cool technology because I think that given a couple of years, we're all going to be using these interfaces with television.
There's been a huge amount of interest in this, yeah. And they've raised a ton of money from some very big names.
Yep.
And it just came out yesterday that you could order. It's not very expensive. It's $80. There you go. And we've all seen, I think... Oh, I'm supposed to do sign into an existing account. Never mind.
Minority Report made manifest.
Yeah, we've all seen these this video, and I was just very curious how closely it would tie into this. It apparently can sit in a pretty flexible number of places. It's sitting right now in front of the keyboard for me.
I'm just not sure if it's a desktop sort of thing. I've always been compelled by this technology when it's on a big screen.
Right.
Where you don't want to have a keyboard or a mouse or something on your lap. But as people get more used to touch interfaces, that's going to have to be a key interface of pretty much anything that's supposed to be useful or handy.
It's just so natural.
Everybody has a thumbprint somewhere on the screen that they put there right after using their iPad for 2 hours.
We talked about this. Like my 4-year-old godson can use an iPad natively, and he just wants to know why everything doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Soon it will.
There you go. You see what's involved in this installation of it, and presumably you could put it in a variety of spots. You could put it up here. I'm putting it kind of below the trackpad.
They should build it into laptops. That would be awesome.
Well, and they've made deals. They've made a lot of deals. If you look at the people that they have made deals with, it looks like they're going places.
Here. I mean, it looks like a cheaper way to make a TV be interactive than making the screen, because you don't want to touch the screen anyway.
Right.
That'd be gross.
Put it in the hot tub right in front of the big screen TV and you got a Super Bowl party.
So the idea is you can navigate, browse the web, flip through photos, mold 3D objects. It was actually created by a guy who did 3D design. He said, why is it so hard to do it in Blender compared to, say, actual clay?
Oh, yeah.
And so he wanted to make something where you could go like that. I would think that you'd be kind of interested in that.
That was funny. In the mid-90s, late 90s, I was at SGI and they actually had something that you put goggles on and you could
right.
put gloves on. And,
right.
Yeah,
right.
And you could model... it was kind of an R&D, but so a lot of people have been thinking about that for a long time, and it'll be interesting. What you really need at that point is you very quickly want to have some kind of sensory input. So you almost want gloves because you want to be able to like have them. You want to feel when you're touching something.
Yep.
But is part of this nostalgia for this specific task because. There's a generation of artists that they never really whacked clay. They really they natively learned how to build models of things digitally. Why would I want to do this when I can actually just have more precision and set my control
points?
It's
dirty.
I've done a lot of modeling.
That's right. I'm a dirty sculptor.
Most of my modeling has been digital. Not with clay. Most of the modeling that I've done is and the problem is in 3D it's really there's a lot of times when you get into something where you think you can think about what you want to create, but actually creating it, you know, with the tools that you have, sometimes you just really want to just grab onto it, move it, especially organic stuff.
You want direct manipulation.
Yeah, you want to be able to just grab on and just kind of play with the idea. And I think that that is going to be definitely, you know, a future, and there's definitely great apps, whether it's Mudbox or ZBrush. I mean, those are ones where you're really painting it, but really what gets in the way is the interface.
Ultimately, the interfaces that mirror actual reality and actual the way humans actually interact with the real world are always going to win out over the abstract ones we're using as weird tools.
At least at the start. I mean, some point in time, the abstract tools definitely give you advantages over over the, you know, because there are abstract things that you have to think about. Like, for instance, when I'm, you know, when you're building, we had to build, for a big movie, I built these round things, round saucers that a whole bunch of people were sitting on in the Senate Rotunda. And what you had to do is the thing is you have to get them perfectly smooth. Mm-hmm. And so using the calculations of Alias, you know, that we used a program that they used to design cars, and you have to create these really, really long curves. And really, the only way to do that is abstractly. You could never get that perfect without letting the computer do it for you.
All right, I'm going to play something called Shim Sham, The Legend of Jazz Hands.
Jazz Hands, Leo.
This is the problem, is I don't have any idea what I'm supposed to do. Nice job.
Don't quit.
What am I doing?
I think you're just trying to select something right now.
Yeah, it says nice job every time I do that.
Which gesture reformats your hard drive, Leo?
A single finger gesture.
Yeah. This is the problem I have with Kinect too, right? Is it's like, it's not yet quite so intuitive.
Your cursor there.
Yeah, I see my cursor. What am I supposed to do?
Now open your hand.
Oh, you kids, you get it. Now what?
I think you moved your hand when you opened it.
Oh, wait a minute. Now I'm going to pick.
So now you quit.
A jazz. Oh, this is a jazz music. I get it. So I just pick Coleman Hawkins, and now I go like this. I don't know.
Jazz hands.
Oh, yeah. See, wait a minute. My hands are doing something. I don't know what they're doing.
That's exactly the user experience that every engineer hopes for. See, I'm doing something with the app.
Welcome,
I don't know what. But
welcome back to being a newborn. My
You're
hands
totally
are doing something.
Like a newborn.
I can't control the
what
interface.
What is going on? Anyway, so it works. The issue is... What the hell? You know,
he's not used to being a newborn.
I'm not. It's like being a newborn.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, this is a jazz program. Oh, you can use your mouse, so that makes it easier. Let's see. Let's do some Benny Goodman. Okay. Start. I got to get one hand in position. I'm just overthinking it. Probably right. We should get a newborn.
Yeah, exactly. A newborn would pick this up. My kids, you know, even someone who's two or three could probably pick this up and start running.
Use the force, Leo.
Is your right hand competing with your left hand? I don't know.
Maybe Leo was trapped inside a glass box.
Things are happening that I don't understand.
Try one-handed.
I do feel like a kid. Oh, maybe I should play against another person.
Does it matter that it's not dead, dead parallel to the screen, that's turned a little bit.
Supposedly, it understands all of that.
Oh, really?
Okay.
It said ready.
But you can't keep it there. So it's very Kinect-like.
It's like playing a video game before you put the quarter in the old days. Things just move and you think you're controlling them.
Yeah. All right, I give up. Anyway, there's quite a few programs in the store. You want to try molecules?
How many theremins?
Ooh,
I bet theremins are like the flashlight apps are to iOS. The theremins are to this device.
So now I can rotate the thing by doing zoom. Okay, rotate, zoom.
You're going to have leap learned of helplessness soon, Leo.
I am. I'm actually I feel like a newborn. How does the world work? There you go. That's my pick of the week. Enjoy it. Hey, it's only $80. It's like 10th of an Alex.
There you go.
Think of it that way.
The temptation to say every 10 seconds, these aren't the droids you're looking for.
Yeah. What I need to do, I mean, literally, you saw me open it up, and so I haven't, here's cut the rope. Maybe I can figure out.
They should make a game where you're just Obi-Wan Kenobi. You just run through things, and all you do is just wave over.
Yeah.
Right. Open door.
And then die.
This does remind me of Kinect.
You win by dying. Yes.
Okay, so play. Yeah, see, it's hard. And then
the cursor's leaping.
Well, as soon as you lose one, my last guy, I shall become only more powerful, Darth.
So you could say, kind of, I don't know how you'd...
Use just a finger?
Yeah, you're right.
Should have that doink sound. Doink.
Okay.
That's a leap master.
Now, quickly slide your finger in the air to cut the rope. Maybe I'll use my left hand. See, there's the thing. So my finger is controlling that mouse, as you see. That's cool. And then what do? I point? Or just leave it there? All right.
Maybe you need to use your hand to do that.
Oh, you're right. You're smarter than a 5-year-old.
Karate chopping Leo.
Oh, you got to change state.
Anyway. It's really a question of how long before you punch the screen, I think.
Here's your gesture recognizer.
You get the idea. I think I'm going to spend more time with it, and someday it'll all make sense to me.
Yes.
But this is the problem with new UIs. I mean, this is Windows 8 writ large. I mean, it's a new UI. People got to learn a new UI.
What I have to do is take it home and have my kids play with it.
They'll know it in 5 minutes. Yeah, you want to? We'll get a kid. We got a kid here. We'll have her try it. I bet she'll get it right like that.
And she'll program our VCR.
I'm basically at the blinking 12 stage. That's what I am.
Explain it to the geezers.
Yeah. Explain it to me. Hey, thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed Mac Break Weekly. We thank Renee Ritchie of iMore.com. And, of course, are you still doing the Talk Vision thing?
We're on Talk Mobile's on break this week. And then next week, we'll be back with security and enterprise. Ooh. And we're going to try to make it the least sleep-inducing security enterprise segment ever created by man.
That's a good goal. TalkMobile2013.com. Thank you, Renee. Always a pleasure. So. Mr. Alex Lindsay heads off for...
I'm attempting to stay home for 2 weeks.
Home.
Wow.
That's my goal.
Home. I was talking to Johnny Jett, our travel expert on the radio show, and I think he's beat you. He hadn't been home. He just got home this weekend. Hadn't been home for 55 days.
No, I don't do that. I literally don't. I mean, I could, but I don't.
He was in Africa. He was in everywhere. Canada. He was sailing down the Danube.
Right.
All in one trip.
No, I don't.
Crazy.
I do lots of little trips.
Yeah.
But I haven't been home for more than 10 days
year and a half. Yeah. So he'll probably be home for a couple of weeks now.
So I'm trying to.
Good. 2 weeks.
I'm working.
This is your vacation.
Oh, that's my goal.
Vacation is staying home.
It's working at home rather than traveling.
I love it. Yeah, so. We thank Mr. Mike Elgin. Always a pleasure, Mike. You're hitting the road.
Yep.
Next week, Florence.
Florence, I will fax you a slice of pizza.
Good. And I hope you have somewhere. How do you get your places? Airbnb or what do you do?
My wife does a lot of searching. She usually uses Airbnb. We found this one on Craigslist, if you can believe that. And just looks for a good deal, gets a monthly or twice monthly rate.
Does she ask about internet access?
Always. That's a minimum. First thing she asks, it has to have good Wi-Fi.
Oh, good.
And that's it. And so we look for good deals. We tend to go to places where it's off season. So right now everybody flees Florence
because
it's too hot. And so we have a really, really nice, it's not really nice, but it's in a really good location. It's in the old part of the city.
Oh,
and so
man. It's
going to be, awesome. Looking forward to it.
Have a great time.
Thank you.
And because you have good Wi-Fi, we hope we will have you still as a regular contributor on all of our shows.
Love to do it.
You can read Mike's work at the Cult of Mac, Cult of Android, Computer World, and of course the best place to follow him on Google+. That's where he posts like a lot.
Yep.
If you haven't circled Mike yet on Google+, you're missing out on some of the best content there. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. He's currently reviewing the X camera phone. When will we see a review of that in the print medium?
We will see it online and elsewhere tomorrow afternoon, I believe.
All right.
I've got lots of media to put together.
Excellent.
As usual, as I'm preparing my final draft, I'm thinking, ooh, if I finish early, maybe I can shoot some video. And then 3:30 in the morning is going to be, I really don't want to shoot video. I want to go to sleep now.
The flesh is weak.
By the way, Mike did a great auto awesome animated GIF just now of me doing the leap motion. You did that with, was your iPhone? And
yeah, I use an iPhone app called Fast Camera. And you can set it up to take, 10 shots a second or something
like
that.
And then Google+ will see that burst for an auto awesome.
Exactly. Just upload between 6 and 15 or whatever it is, pictures that are very similar, and it'll create an animated Jeff.
And, of course, this you're using the Oculus, right? Or what is it called?
Oh, yeah, the
Holoclip. Holoclip.
Exactly.
That's this why it's a little fishy.
Always a wonderful thing to use.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That really came out well.
I could recommend that once a month.
Love the Holoclip, yeah. That really came out well. All right. I'll plus it right now. Yeah, thank you for joining us. We do Mac Break.
Apollo 12 appearance about it.
It does, doesn't it? I feel like I'm in zero gravity demonstrating the leap.
Sorry, go ahead.
We do the show 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on Tuesdays. I hope you'll watch live. We love having the chat room here, and as you can see, we refer to the chat room a lot. If you can't, though, on-demand audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly. And that's one way you can get it, but there are lots of other ways. Anywhere you get podcasts, Instacast, Dogcatcher, Pocket Cast, Apple's Podcasts app, and, of course, iTunes and the Zoom store. We're everywhere you want to be. If you subscribe, hint, hint, then you'll just get it every week when it comes out. Thanks for joining us. Now get back to work because break time is over.